My name is Joe Ricks, and this is You Can Do Life on Life Discipleship. What I want to start with this morning, just to start out, I want everybody to grab your Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible, sit next close, somebody's got one. And what we're going to do is I want you guys to spend, I'm going to give you about, it's 24 verses long, I'll give you about 5 minutes to read through that quickly, and then we're going to talk about it for a second. So you got 5 minutes to read through there. Okay, if you're not quite done, that's all right. What I want to do now is I want you guys to share with me something God just impressed on you as you read that, or something, maybe it's the first time you saw it. Maybe you read it 1,000 times and something stuck out, but chime in on what some of those things are. Flee from you, yeah.
Flee from you, yeah. And that's exactly what Jesus did right there. He held his ground, he knew, what it took. And, Jesus resisted the devil, and I feel like that's what it takes to resist the devil is on the scripture. Mm-hmm. Not only that, he's doing what you gotta do. Like, if you have to flee from something, flee from it. Don't stay and try to fight it if you know you can't fight it.
Yeah. Good. Someone else.
I noticed something I hadn't noticed before. I came to verse 11. The devil left him and the angels came and ministered to him. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, Jesus is God. And Jesus is having this kind of one-on-one head-to-toe with the devil. And the devil leaves and the angels come and minister to Jesus. So the angels come and minister to God. So, like, he's God. He doesn't need this, like, backup pat on the back. Are you okay, man? You survived that? You all right? But if God the Father is willing to send his angels to minister to Jesus, who's also God, after a head-to-toe with the devil, how much more backup have we got when we go head-to-toe with the devil and survive it? If you're like, hey, Chris, hey, Brady, hey, John, you okay? You survived that? You good to go? Surround us with his angels when we go ahead and tell
him. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good insight. What else?
Here. I just love verse 2. After recording, that seems to record your prayer message. I was hungry. Kind of feel like that's a good
statement. He was hungry, yeah. Kind of a good image of his humanness at the same time, though. He was hungry after 40 days, as you would expect. I would be very hungry after 40 days. But it shows that human piece of Christ, that he was in flesh with us. Yeah, that's good. Anyone else? Exactly. Must have been something about this Jesus when he asked it, huh? Wow, yeah, that's good. Anything else? Well, you may be wondering, why did we read this passage this morning? Well, that's because it was in my reading plan this morning when I got up and had a quiet time. It was just what today's reading was. But the reason I wanted to share that with you is one of the biggest hang-ups we have sometimes is really understanding what discipleship looks like. How do I do it? Am I qualified? Neil Walker told me one time, he's the director down at University of Southern Cal, he said, this is discipleship defined. It's probably one of the best definitions I've heard. Is it's walking with God, then turning around and teaching someone how you did it. Walking with God, then turning around and teaching somebody how you did it. Now, who in this room could do that? You could walk with God and tell somebody how you did it. We could all do that, couldn't we? And what we just got done doing, I call this a group quiet time. I just simply had you get in the Word and said, what is God teaching you in the Word today? And there's not one person in this room, I don't think, that couldn't have done that. Like, if you had someone walk up to you today later and said, you know what, I'm really struggling with my quiet time, could you do one with me? that you couldn't do the same thing, right? You couldn't just open up to whatever your reading thing is. Maybe you're not, I'm reading through a plan, but maybe you just decide to go through book of the Bible and you're in Acts or something. You're like, yeah, let's sit down, let's do it. You guys could do it. And that's the first thing I want to tell you is the simplicity of discipleship. It's simple in one way. There's complexities too, but the answers are always simple with God. And that's probably why he calls us sheep, is because we need simple answers. But all you got to do is to help somebody on the journey. Tell them how you did what you do know. Don't get caught up in what you don't know. Get caught up in what you do know. Like I said, most of you know how to read the Word, and as you shared with me, you can find insights. And there's different insights in different places. It has to do with where you are in your journey as far as what you pull out of that passage. So that's what we're going to talk about here for the next 45 minutes or so. And it's just this idea of life on life discipleship. Getting out there, telling people how to walk with Jesus based on what you know. My name again is Joe Ricks. I'm the director of a campus ministry in Gunnison, Colorado. It's a little state school, about 2,500 students. And I wear a lot of hats there. I also am volunteer fireman in that town. I'm also the football chaplain for our college football team. Do a lot of different things. But the thing that gets me the most excited is being able to live life on life with guys. And I just want to share a few principles with you. I've been kind of instructed with a few tasks to talk about this topic. Also to introduce you to a material that somebody wrote that we're using. I mean, it's nothing fancy. It's nothing new under the sun. It's just working for us. And somebody asked us if we would be happy to share that. And I am. And I've got a guy up here with me, Zach. It's from my campus, and he's going to share a little bit with you guys. He's a student there. But I just want to go through a few points here, and then we'll get into some of that other stuff. But if I'm going to do life-on-life discipleship, what do I got to have? What kind of things do I need to know? Well, the first thing is you need to be a disciple of Christ. Now, that may seem obvious to some of us, but sometimes people are out there trying to make disciples that don't even know Jesus. And I'm telling you, if you don't know Jesus yet, you got to get that one handled first. You got to cross that line, as Tim Elmore said, of faith and get that handled. And so I always start there just because sometimes there's people that aren't there yet. If you want this to be an effective thing, you're going to have to know who Christ is. I think the next piece is I've walked in discipleship, and I was kind of introduced to the true idea of life on life discipleship probably about some 15 years ago. Before that, I was into doing a lot of programs. I was walking with God. I've known Christ since I was 5 years old. My dad's a preacher. I grew up loving Jesus. But as I got introduced to this idea of discipleship 15 years ago, I learned that there are some requirements to discipleship that have to happen. The very first one, I think, though, is you have to choose to be obedient to Christ. See, because we've been instructed to do things. All throughout the gospel, he's telling us things. In Matthew 28, verses 18 through 20, we're going to get the Great Commission. One of the things he says, and go and teach them all that I've commanded you. Well, what are those things? What are those things? Well, I'm in a Sunday school class right now that I lead at our church. We're going back through the book of Matthew. We started at the end and looked at that verse, and we went back to the beginning. So let's start working on what are those things he's commanded us to do. And that issue is obedience. You know, Jesus said in John 14:21, he who has my commandment and keeps it is the one who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will disclose myself to him. See, obedience becomes a place even how we show love. A lot of us are about the love of God, but oftentimes our reaction to his commandments tells him that we don't love him. We gotta be obedient. So that's kind of a hard one for us to swallow sometimes, because we do want it to be kind of grace and love. But, you know, God's a God of grace. He's a God of love. He's also a God of justice. He's a God of wrath. He's all those things. And he has some things out there, and we need to be obedient to what he's told us to do. The other thing is, before you can impart something with somebody about how to walk with Jesus, you're gonna have to be involved in some of those very basic things yourself of the Christian life. For example, daily reading in the Bible and praying. That's probably one of the key elements of the Christian life. The beauty of the Christian thought process, or whatever you want to call it, that Jesus brought to us was, we don't go and stand before an idol and hope they hear us. We have a relationship with the Creator of the universe. Well, if you're going to help somebody in their relationship, you got to be working on yours. You know, If I worked at my marriage like I've worked at my walk with God sometimes, I would not be doing very well in my marriage. And it's funny how we have these other relationships that we're very much wanting to make right, but then God's kind of one we put on the back burner. He's kind of easy to put back there. But we have to be involved in those basics. Are you reading the Word of God? Are you praying and talking to God on a regular basis? Are you memorizing His Word? These are all things that are basics of the Christian life. This idea of evangelism that's been presented to us. You know, are you sharing your faith? Because these are all things, if you're going to do life on life discipleship, if you're going to do it how Jesus did it, these are all things He was about. In Mark, we find Jesus, after a very busy day, getting up early in the morning in Mark 1:35, so He could go alone somewhere to pray. You know, because it was that important to Him that He got time with God. So are you involved in those basic things? And if you're not, that's okay. Start. Get involved in those things. Struggle with that stuff. If you need help yourself, get help. But I'm guessing a lot of you are here today because you've kind of figured some of this out. You've kind of started the journey and you want to know how to pass this on. But you don't have anything to offer somebody in discipleship if you haven't met with God first. You have zero. And so make sure that that's that piece, that basic, is happening all the time. And that doesn't mean you got to have the read through the Bible plan that some people are into. I do that. That's just what I like. But it's just that you're daily speaking to God and letting Him speak to you through His Word. That you got to be doing that. And if you're not, this idea of living life on life with somebody is going to feel like failure to you. Because you will reproduce who you are. Period. And so you got to keep that in mind. The next thing I think that's important as we're living life on life is you got to have a plan. We are so fly by the seat of our pants. We want it to feel right. We want it to be right. But you need to have a plan. And like when I lead somebody to Christ, I try to use a good follow-up material. I don't just kind of say, well, here's the things I think they need, because I'm lazy by nature. And it'll be real easy for me not to finish something if I don't have a structure in place. And so I want the guy I lead to Christ to walk with God the rest of his life, not just for the few moments of his existence that he's with me. I want him to make a lifestyle change. So you need to have a plan. In your plan, you know, you need to meet weekly for accountability, Bible study, prayer, question and answer time, scripture memory. You know, a young person in the faith has a lot of questions. Have you ever noticed that? If you haven't discipled somebody yet, this will come. But just think about your own journey. How many questions did you have? How many things did you not understand when you read them in the Word? And you're like, man, I don't get that. Now, the cool thing I think about being disciples is there's sometimes they'll say, I don't get that either. Let's figure it out together. It's not a know-it-all mentality. But it is planning to be in there and doing stuff with them. You know, I think one of the hang-ups we have in life and life discipleship is when you're dealing with a felt need. A lot of us have felt needs. We have things that are real to us we need to deal with those as a discipler, but we don't want to get stuck there. I had a student a few years ago, and he had some just family issues, things in his past. And before I knew it, we'd spent 8 weeks talking about his family issue. We didn't get to God at all. You know? And I realized, hey, I need to just stay on task. Now, every week I'd ask him about his family issues. We'd pray about those things. But I said, man, let's get to the Word. You know what he said after the next 8 weeks? He says, the more we got in the Word, the more I'm starting to understand my family. The more I'm able to deal with the pressures that that's producing in my life. Because he came from a home that wasn't believers, that were totally falling apart. But he says, man, the more we get in the Word, the more I'm understanding what I'm supposed to do and how I'm supposed to act. So make sure you have a plan. A lot of your campus ministries have the stuff in place for this already. And don't be afraid to go and say, hey, what do you got? Sometimes I have students in my ministry, and I'm going to introduce you to this material here in a little bit that we use, but they've gone through the material, but they never connected that they could turn around and use that with somebody. And they'll be like, well, Joe, I just need a material. And I'll look at them and say, well, have you ever done Call to Joy? And they're like, yeah, it's a book I did with Zach. Well, you know, could you think you could teach them that book? Well, yeah. So sometimes we're kind of worried about that, or we're seeing, like at a conference like this, you can see all this new stuff. And sometimes use what you know. It doesn't, the idea of discipleship, although there's new materials, new programs, there's things out there all the time, the basics have not changed in 2,000 years. They haven't changed. People still need to know about the assurance of salvation. People still need to know about the Word of God being active in their life. These are just basics of the Christian life. So whatever you know, go with it and have a plan. The next thing I've seen is be intentional always with people. If you think you want to meet with somebody, don't wait for them to come knock on your door, because it's not going to happen. In 15 years of doing man-to-man discipleship, I've only had one student ever come to me and say, I want you to disciple me. And that was just because God was doing a big work in his life at that moment. One person says, I need what you got. Most of the people I had to go to them, and sometimes it's an easy. It's just, hey, would you like to get together and meet? And they're like, yeah. Other times it's kind of like, I keep going and going. I'm kind of the Energizer Bunny, you know. I keep going at them until they finally say, yeah, let's meet. But some of the things I learned in that idea of intentional, as you interact with people, as you look at their life, is I've learned things like Christ always said what needed to be said. When he saw something wrong in somebody's life, he said it. Sometimes we're worried about that. Conflict is not something humans like. Now, we tend to have a lot of experience at it, but we don't like it. And Christ would just say what needed to be said. He always did what needed to be done. And if whatever the needs that needed to be met, if it required an action, he put an action with it. Most of the time, people won't ask you to be discipled. Many don't even know that they need to be discipled. A lot of people don't know that. When they get it, sometimes I've had guys meet with me for half a year and suddenly realize they were being discipled. Kind of woke up and they're like, hey, oh, that's what we're doing. You know, our problem is we got to reject fear. You know what our biggest fear is that they won't like us, or they won't like what I'm doing, or I don't know enough answers. And what I'd say to you is work through that, be intentional, look into their life, see what needs to be done. Because as you get to meet a person week after week after week, you'll get to know them. You'll know what they really need. And that's kind of goes back to those felt needs. You'll kind of say, well, yeah, I know that's his felt need. But see, that's the symptom. And there's a cancer over here I need to remove to get rid of the symptom. And it's going to require being intentional. Trust what the Spirit tells you in those moments. But you're going to have to be intentional. Discipleship doesn't happen on accident. It doesn't happen on accident. Just as we read in Matthew a minute ago, some guys didn't just come with Jesus because he was walking by. He said, come follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. He intentionally engaged them and they followed him. They dropped what they're doing. And I think your experience will be there's a lot of people that will drop what they're doing because they desperately want to understand how to do a better job of walking with Jesus. And if you ask them, they're going to be like, wow, I get more people that want to do it than don't. In my ministry. Discipleship, as you do this idea of life on life, it is a lifestyle, not a meeting. In Leroy Ims' book, The Lost Art of Disciple Making, he says, you're not doing discipleship just because you meet with a guy once a week. That's not discipleship. How did Jesus do it? He took 12 men and he lived with them for 3 years. And out of those 12, he had three that were really close to him that he spent even extra time with. Peter, James, and John. And he lived with them, though. He did all he could. And some of the ways that looks like is, you know, every one of you in this room probably have to do laundry every week, right? Now, how many in this room actually have a laundry facility in the apartment you live in where you don't ever have to go outside? A few of you here. Well, you know what? Even if you have that, you know what? The guy you're discipling needs to do his laundry. Maybe it's worth going to the laundromat for a couple hours. Why? Because you get time with them. You know? How many of you go to the grocery store to buy food? Your disciples got to go to the grocery store too. Great opportunity. And the reason I say that in our busy society, that's the number one reason I get with discipleship. I don't got time. You got time. There's things that all of us got to do, and we could do them together sometimes. And try to get extra time. We all like to play. We're a culture of people that want to be entertained and play. If you like to watch Monday Night Football and you're a guy, there's probably one of your disciples likes to watch Monday Night Football. Get that time with them. You know, if you have a certain kind of hobby that you do, there might be somebody else. My wife scrapbooks. She's got students that like to scrapbook. They come over and scrapbook with her 2 hours at a time. People will make time for what they want to do. So make sure you're getting time. Use every experience. You know, I travel to Denver a few times a year, try to take somebody with me if at all possible. Why? Because it's windshield time. It's a great time to have conversations and for things to pipe up, you know. Max told me one time, Max Barnett said, you know, when he couldn't think of any other reason to get a guy, he'd say, hey, let's go to Tulsa, I gotta do something. Well, the something was to get a Coke at Sonic in Tulsa so he could get that several hour journey of just time with them. He'd just say, they get there and they say, well, what are we gonna do now? He said, well, I just came to Tulsa to get this Coke. And it was so he could get time with people. If you can't think of a reason, just make one. But you gotta get time with people if you're gonna disciple them. If you're gonna live life on life with people, you have to do ministry together. It is not Zach. You go and you share your faith somewhere. If Zach comes to me and says, I need help with sharing my faith, we need to go do that together. We need to go out there and try to do that together. Whatever that looks like. Whatever, if that's the cold turkey, that's what God's laying on Zach's heart. I need to do more cold turkey evangelism. Then I go with him and try to do that. It doesn't mean I'm comfortable with it. It doesn't mean I'm the master of it. It just means we do it together. Jesus sent his disciples out in twos. Jesus went with his people when he was here. He didn't say, just go by yourself and figure it out. He said, let me go with you. Let me teach you. That time when he finally sends them, he's already equipped them. He's not a figure out how to do this. He says, here's what you know. Here's what you need to teach. Go do it. That's different. Most of the time we need to do it together. I think the other piece as we look at this is trust God for all the things you are lacking in this role. Human beings are the most insecure creatures on the planet. We constantly think, I'm not qualified, I don't have the tools. And here's the deal, you're right. You don't have them. You don't have it all figured out. God is going to have to work through you in some things. You're going to have to trust Him for what you lack in. And you are going to get the questions you don't know the answers. You're going to disciple the guy you're not so sure shouldn't be discipling you sometimes. You're going to get that guy, and you're going to feel that way about it, but God has put that together the way it is for a reason. Trust Him for what you lack. Whether that's skill or heart or experience, whatever it is, say, God, I just know you brought him here for me to work with or her to work with. Help me. Help me to do that. And then the one piece, this is something I've learned. I can't think of an exception in my ministry for this, but don't disciple people of the opposite sex. Just don't do that. There's a lot of reasons not to. The most primary one is, I know Cassie back here, and, you know, if I tried to disciple Cassie, I'd be so far off in left field because her mind works totally different than mine, right, Cassie? You know, we're just different people. Guys and girls are wired different. See, I can look into Zach's life and know exactly what Zach's struggling with because I'm a man. And I can look at his life and know what kind of things are hard for him in the Christian journey. You know, for example, most men don't like to read. You know, they just don't. Now they'll do it, but they don't like it. So I know that. So with my guys, I'm usually questioning, how is your reading the word really going? You know, could you say I kind of did some stuff, but how's it really going? You know, the male and female mind are totally different. They work different. The way God talks to us is different. And we need to know that. But the other pieces are, is if you start discipling somebody of the opposite sex, it's real easy for you to kind of fall in love. And some people say, well, that's not bad. I wouldn't mind finding somebody to fall in love with. But you're not going to be real. You're not going to be genuine. And then as time goes on, you know, I'm married now. I'm definitely not discipling anybody of the opposite sex. It's just not going to happen. But I think the biggest thing is we've got to own the fact that we're not the same, which is what society has taught you for so long, is that we're all the same. We're not the same. The way our hearts work, the way our heads work, the way our bodies work, everything is different by design from God. And be okay with that. So as you look at this idea of one-on-one discipleship, life-on-life discipleship, you're going to have to go out, you have to live with them. But keep in mind, it is doing what you already know. Somebody has invested in your life. Even if they haven't invested in your life, I used to think that because I didn't have a person that kind of discipled me. But you know what? God taught me some things that I could teach other people. A lot of people listen to a guy like Max and say, well, I'm not like Max. Did you know Max Barnett never had anybody that really invested in his life in his college years? Maybe you're in a ministry where you do have that and you think, whoa, really? But Max found out about it. He learned about it. He figured out what to teach other people. He walked with God and told people how he did it. And that was it. Now, you know, as I've gotten to know Max, he's our state director. And he doesn't think he knows it all. As a matter of fact, he usually tells me things like, well, Joe, we'll figure out a lot of things together because I haven't really figured it all out yet. And that's the genuineness of our discipleship has to be that way. We don't know it all, guys. But you have something to offer. Now, is there any question? I'm going to stop here for a second. We're going to transition in a little different piece here in a second. So is there questions that you have? Or, you know, I've tried this and this didn't work. Give me some insight. What do you guys have?
Is it looming? And so there's a lot of just kind of consequential daily contact. Yes, I'm kind of struggling on a little bit of overload, worrying that, and some of those worries have been validated by conversations, both loud and quiet, that we've had to have with each other. But how do you prevent that overload? That all we ever do is talk about God. Or all we ever do is talk about how bad I am. All we ever do is...
I think as you work in relationship with people, part of the way you overcome that is it's always good to, if you're discipling a guy you're living with, it's probably always good to get a little time away. That's probably not a bad thing in that setting. But that everything may not have to be about God in this sense that we always got to bring up and make it a godly conversation. God's everywhere. He's in everything we're doing. We know that. And so it may not be you got to bring that in all the time. It's just know that God's going to deal with that. But the other piece there sometimes is giving people space. You know, I just think if you're living with the guy you're discipling and you're starting to get some friction there, it's probably good to get a little time away from each other at times and to kind of go that route with it. Now, if it's, you know, the other thing sometimes too is make sure that a person you're discipling wanted you to disciple them. Because there's times we kind of force that on people. We kind of think, well, that's just what they need. I'm just going to do that. And because a guy, I have an accountability partner I meet with back in Gunnison, and I don't ask him the hard question unless he's given me that permission. I just don't walk up to guys I've known for 10 years and never had a real serious conversation with them and just say, well, let me start talking to you about your thought life. How's that look? Well, they haven't given me that permission in their life yet. So make sure that when you're discipling somebody, that they know you're discipling them and that that's really what they want. Because you're going to be a frustrated individual if you're discipling somebody who really didn't want to be discipled. Because you are literally pouring your life into this person. And I've had students, I've met with one guy for 8 weeks and I realized, I don't think he wants to be discipled. Even though he agreed to come initially, and I just finally asked him that. I said, is this something you want? And he goes, no. I said, well, that's okay. You know? And I trust that God will bring him back around. And there's been some of those guys that have come back in their senior years and said, you know where we started in my freshman year and I kind of didn't want to do that? I'm kind of ready for that now. And be okay with that. So, other questions? Right here.
With the guy that you said that he didn't really get it, what do you do with the guys that you're like, hey, you want to meet, and you know, you sit down and talk for how long, and it kind of seems like nothing catches, or you just keep talking and they don't really understand what you're trying to convey to them?
Yeah. So let me make sure I'm understanding what you said correctly here. So you got a guy you're meeting with him, but it doesn't seem like he's really wanting to. All the stuff you're teaching him, he's not really internalizing.
Yeah, discipleship, I guess. That he doesn't understand that I'm trying to kind of pass on things that I've picked up.
Okay. First thing is when you're going to meet with somebody, let them know exactly what you're trying to do. Define it, because the word discipleship in Christian circles is used in a lot of different. It's kind of a relative word in Christianity sometimes. It means a different thing to different people. Make sure you describe what you're wanting to do with him. Get that kind of down into something manageable. Like the way I approached him, God said, I would like to meet with you once a week and help you walk with Jesus. And hopefully give you some tools that will continue that walk the rest of your life. Keep it simple and concise. And some might say to me, that's too heavy. I don't want to do that. Some say, okay. There's some that say, okay. And then as we get to meet, I realize, I don't think they're really okay. Or they like to come talk to me, but they don't really want to change their life. That happens with students, and those guys I'll cut off. Nicely, I'll cut them off. I'll say, you know what? We've been meeting, and it just doesn't seem like every week you haven't read your Bible, you haven't done Scripture, and this has been going on for like 10 weeks. And what that does sometimes when I say, well, maybe we shouldn't meet anymore, if they really did want to meet, they're going to start getting stuff done. If they don't want to meet or they're not ready yet, I simply say, hey, you know what? I'd be happy to get together with you every once in a while. We can sit and talk, but I don't want to waste your time. You know, if you're just coming here, and I don't want to waste my time, but I really don't want to waste theirs either. And so I don't force it. You know, like sometimes the idea of it's neat to some people, but once they get into it, the commitment's more than they bargain for. And so you got to kind of work with them through that a little bit. So, anybody else? Question? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm going to transition a little bit. Max asked me, I don't know how many of you are familiar with a guy named Billy Hanks Jr. He worked with the Billy Graham Association for some number of years. I don't know Billy personally. I've met him once. Max discipled Billy when he was at Baylor University. Max used to drive all the way from Dallas down to Baylor and meet with Billy and some other guys. And Billy, he worked with the follow-up team for Billy Graham Association, but has since kind of developed his own evangelism organization. And he wrote a study, a discipleship book called, the whole thing's called Operation Multiplication. And it was designed initially for churches. He had a friend, either a friend or a guy he'd discipled, that was out in a church in the South somewhere. And if somebody got saved in their church, out of all the people that were getting saved in their church, 18 months later, the number was staggering. It was like 92% of them were gone 18 months later. Just weren't in the church. And so this guy kind of called Billy and said, man, this is where we're at. And Billy started working on this material with some of his people. And coming up with something, they've spent, I've been told, millions of dollars in research on this material that they've come out with. And they went back into some of these churches and started implementing this discipleship piece. And now that number has almost totally reversed. 18 months later, 92% of those people are in the church and they're active in the church. And Max introduced this material to me about 4 years ago at a director's conference in Colorado and asked, you know, if anybody would be willing to try it. And we were at a place where we had some good materials. We've used a lot of NAV materials and stuff, but we're kind of looking for something maybe a little different, with a little different bent that really would help equip our students. And was the piece for me is always that it's easily reproducible, because there's a lot of stuff out there that's kind of really hard to work with. And so we kind of dove into this material and started using it with some students. We did it like a test. We were kind of like, okay, we're going to try this with some people, and if it doesn't fly, we're not going to use it. You know, because there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, and you guys know this. I mean, on your campuses, your ministry may even have two or three different resources they use, and we just thought, you know, we'll try this out. So we tried it, and initially, there's a equipping piece. So, like, if you're already kind of a discipler, you don't have to go through this whole study. They got it condensed into 8 weeks to kind of give you an understanding of the two books. And you just, it was really easy. We just pulled a card out of a packet and it said, okay, go to this page and start reading. So that's what we did. And, it was me and an intern we had at the time named Eric and my associate Tim. And so we went for 8 weeks doing this, and we kind of planned it in the summer so that we'd be kind of ready to go by fall if we decided this was good stuff. We got to about week four and we already knew we were doing this thing. It was that good. And the piece I think that stood out to me the most is it does a good job of helping. The piece they found in the churches was the reason people leave church is because they don't have friends. That's why they leave church. It's not because the pastor's not preaching well. It's not because the fried chicken wasn't good at the potluck. It's because they don't have friends. And so they have a built-in piece here that helps you make friends with this person. It gives you suggestions. Like if you're somebody who's not very people-oriented, it says, well, ask them these questions. See what's going on in their life. You know, the piece that I told you about, go and do ministry with them, it's built into the material. And so we started to use this, and we really thought, this is pretty good stuff. And it's an interesting format. There's a... I don't got time to go into this, and I don't want to do a big commercial for you guys either. But you get two pieces. This is the second in the series. It's called The Call to Growth. This is the Timothy guide. This is the discipler guide. You see the difference in size? There's a little bit of a difference there. In The Call to Joy, which is the first book, that deals with the things like assurance of salvation. The main purpose of A Call to Joy is at the end that they have established a quiet time. They understand some basic principles, a basic follow-up study. But they go through some things and say, hey, we want you to know this stuff. We want to establish some things. So there's a piece, and then, you know, I work in the Discipler's Guide, and actually in The Call to Joy, I didn't bring those books with me. They're opposite. The leader's book's thicker than the Discipler's book. And it's got all this information. It's got illustrations in it built in. Have you ever just said, I wish I had a good illustration? They got them built in. Like, I'll give you an example of one. So I ask a student after we look at the bridge illustration, I said, so are you a Christian? Now, Craig, for fun, just tell me, I think so. You think so. Now, see, I'm sitting there. Sometimes with Christians, that's an okay answer. We think, okay, we're on a good page. He says, let me share an illustration with you, Craig. If I were to ask you if you're married, are you married?
Yes.
No, absolutely married. You don't think so. You're sure. Okay, now Zach, are you married?
No.
No, Zach is not married. And then I will turn back to the disciple and say, now let me ask you this question again. Are you a Christian? Because that's kind of, you know, it brings them in a mindset. It realizes there's not this, well, I think so. I hope so. I don't hope I'm married. I know if my wife Angela was standing here right now, she'd be like, no, I don't hope that you're married either. So there's some of these built-in illustrations. They're good ones. Now, some of them, I said, I don't like that illustration, but it reminds me of one I know, and I just build it in. The other piece is the two books together equal about 18 lessons, and it's totally flexible. A lot of our program materials out there that I've seen are very time-oriented. You have to do the next step, the next step, the next step. If I show up with Zach and he says, you know, my grandfather just died, buddy, we put that down. We deal with the real need at the moment. And we'll get back to this later. Or, and this happens to Zach and I, I'm going to have him come up and testify in a minute, but we might start in on his lesson, and in our hour and a half time together, we may only get two pages in. Well, no biggie. We'll just finish next week, right, Zach? Well, we do, right? And so it has some built-in tools. The other thing is, it has some built-in readings. Like I said, college students don't really like to read other than what they have to. There's always exceptions. I know there's people out there who love reading, and they'll read all kinds of books. But there are some of the greatest discipleship writers out there that they've compiled and put in these books. You got Coleman, who wrote Master Plan Evangelism. Leroy Imes. Billy Hanks wrote some stuff himself in there. Gary Coons, who used to be with Campus Crusade for Christ. They've got them all with pieces in there in little tidbits. And then there's some others that they call them inspired readings, and they just kind of talk about things like, how do I give adoration to God? And it might be, you know, 10 pages in the book. Those have become the pieces that a lot of our students have said, that's it. I didn't know how adoration really looked. And I'll be honest, when I read through it, I thought, I haven't been teaching adoration very well. It became a tool that we just use, and it's working for us. Our students it's easily reproducible for our students. I just simply say, hey, have you done this? And they're like, well, yeah, I went through that book. Okay, well, here, let me show you a few nuances in the leader side of it. Go with it. I'm going to have Zach come up here for a second. I'm going to just kind of have him share a few things as we're winding down here. He's gone through this material. I'll give you a little bit of background on Zach. He's from Arizona. He came to our ministry and is going to be done in school, what, 3 years? 3 years. So, Zach, tell them a little bit just about your Christian heritage and your walk with Christ.
All right. Well, I accepted Christ in my life when I was 5 years old with my family, because I grew up in a strong Christian family. And just growing up, you know, there was, of course, ups and downs in my walk with God. But my parents were always very supportive. And then when I came to college, I really had to make my faith my own for the first time in my life. And that is when it really exploded for me. And after my first year of college, that's when Joe and I started meeting together for this discipleship thing. And I really came to enjoy that time because my parents growing up had told me, and I heard it other places, that the influences you allow in your life, the people you hang out with, the movies you watch, the books you read, that's who you'll become in 5 years. And, I mean, for a lot of people out there, 5 years is college today. And so I started meeting with Joe for that influence, because I knew that influence was important. And that influence has really helped me grow in my walk with God since coming to college. And the accountability that it's provided has really helped me a lot as well.
I'm going to tell you something about Zach. When I first met Zach, I was a little intimidated by him as campus minister. And the reason was, is because it's hard to disciple people that really got their act together. Zach's parents had done a good job. Discipleship had kind of happened for Zach. That doesn't happen for a lot of our students. That doesn't happen a lot for you who are students, probably are thinking, well, I didn't get that either. Zach had that piece. And so when I introduced this study, I thought, man, this first book's going to be kind of below Zach a little bit. I knew that. And I said to Zach, I said, look at this material. See, because all our students have to go through this material. This is just our, if we're working with somebody, they're going through this material. And so I told, the way I approached Zach about it though was, knowing that he had that background, I said, I want you to go through this material because you may have to turn around and use it with somebody. And so he did that. And talk a little bit about that as you went through that first book, Call to Growth. It dealt with some of those things like assurance and things like that. What did you, as you experienced it as a, somebody being discipled, how did that go for you?
Actually, the first book is called The Call to Joy, that we went through. And it, to me, when I first started, the first few chapters, I'm like, wow, this is like stuff they teach you in Sunday school. And I didn't have a great attitude about it. Joe had been chasing me down for a little while to start this stuff. And so I had to really kind of let myself really start to learn, open up to what can I get out of this. And once I started really opening up to the books, what the message they had for me, I started to learn new things, because a lot of things that I had just accepted my entire life, I was talking to newer believers that were my friends and stuff, and they didn't have that. And now I had just like learned it in a way that I could teach it to others. And so that really got me excited about this program that it becomes, just because I started learning a way to share it with other people. I'd learned it from my parents, but this was a way that I could really share it with other people.
Yeah, Zach and I went through this study, and the first book, like I said, was real easy, but the second book really started to engage him a little more. The second book, Call to Growth, really deals with some issues of churchmanship. It deals with your relationship with God, like I mentioned that a minute ago, like adoration. What does that really look like? What does prayer look like? The other piece it has in there in the second book is, you start scripture memory in the second book. I know a lot of ministries start that pretty early, but the second book, all the scripture memory is based around evangelism, because they know that young believers have more opportunities with the lost than those who are more mature. It's just the truth in life. The longer I'm a Christian, the less lost people I know. And it's just a nature of it. I have to work hard to get out there. But it builds into that, teaches the bridge illustration, which a lot of you are probably familiar with, but it also teaches the verses go with it. So everything's based around doing that presentation. And there's every week in the second book, there's some application. Not every week, but there's always an application piece. It's like, okay, this week go out and try to share your faith, or share a word of truth, or some things that he goes over in there. And so that becomes a tool. And I know Zach really appreciated that second book more so, because it kind of opened up some new areas for him. You want to share any of those? Maybe one of those that stood out?
One of the ones that stood out to me was on prayer. They really did a great job of diving into, what does it mean to pray? What's the purpose? What are you doing when you pray? And one of the things, like Joe said, that came up for both of us, and we still discuss it to this day, is the adoration part of prayer. David was amazing, throughout the Psalms, that giving God adoration and, just talking about his glory. And I didn't do that when I prayed before starting, Call to Growth. I came with my list of you know, God, I need you to do this, this, and this for me. And it was all about me and not about God. And this book really taught me how to use prayer as a way to praise God. And so that's just one example of the great stuff.
Zach, share for a minute. Now, Zach's on the other side of this. Now, he's gone through, and now he is discipling somebody with this material. He's a senior this year. Talk to them a little bit about what you like about the piece that, you know, as far as the leadership side of that. What do you like about that, and what how does it help you kind of be a better discipler?
Okay. I'm discipling two guys this year, and they're vastly different. And I never really thought, you know, like up until this point that I could lead somebody spiritually. I'm kind of at that time in my life where I'm thinking about, you know, marriage and stuff like that, and I would have to, you know, lead others spiritually. I've started to learn some great stuff through these books, because I learned that as long as I'm pursuing God, I can show others what I'm learning. And these books are extremely easy to use. They have simple instructions, and all I had to do to disciple someone else is say, this is what I know, this is how I can help you, and let's pursue God together. And it's been really great. I've built really strong friendships through this, because, you know, you can have your buddies that you see every week, you know, or in class or whatever, and once I started discipling somebody, I had a purposeful relationship with somebody where we allowed each other, as the relationship built, got stronger, to have accountability in each other's lives, and those relationships have grown infinitely stronger. I mean, stronger than I'd ever had relationships before, starting this kind of a discipleship project. So
the other piece that we liked about it too, I mean, Zach's obviously someone who grew up in church. A lot of our ministry actually has gotten saved while they're at Western, where we're at. And now I would have brought another guy up here, a friend of ours named Nick, but Nick's a little more shy in front of the crowd. But he's currently using it too, and it's been awesome for him. It helps him get some answers and stuff. And so as we presented that, Mac, like I said, Max wanted us to share this with you as an opportunity to look at something new. There's a packet here that they sell this, I think, for $30. Unless you're in campus ministries, they sell it to you for $15. Now, it doesn't say that on the website material. When you call them, you say, Max Barnett told me that collegiate ministers get this for $15, and they go, that's correct. I'm glad you told me that. And they sell it first for half price. But in the packet's everything you need to lead somebody. The whole process is in there. You can go to discipleshiplibrary.com, and Billy Hanks actually has Operation Multiplication teaching that he's done on there that you can just listen to if you're kind of like, well, I read the sheet, but it still doesn't make sense. The thing I've liked about it the most, we started with our guys first, because that's who read it first, and our staff ladies kind of picked it up later. But I had a student come up to me, a young lady, say, how come the guys in your group are so tight? She says, we don't have that with the girls yet. See, we're about three generations ahead of the girls with this material. But that piece of making friends has been the critical piece. Our group of guys that we hang with, we're pretty close. We're tight. We play together. We have fun together. We worship God together. It's a piece that has just drawn us all in more together. And so I throw that out there because a lot of times in this day and age, and you guys know this, because of technology and some things, we're not as socially adept as we once were. It's a lot harder to make friends, you know. Some of you probably know what I'm talking about. You have an easier time talking to somebody on Facebook than you do talking to them face to face. You know, that's true for a lot of people. That's becoming more and more true. Our culture almost likes that. It kind of isolates ourselves. But this will help you with that. If you're one of those people who say, man, I do kind of struggle with that, there's some information there that he'll help you with. And it's just solid discipleship material. Like I said, if you're a director in here, you're going to read this and think, well, this is nothing new. And you're right, it's not. it's just somebody has put it together in a way that works. It's working on our campus. That's why Max wanted us to share it with you. We currently, our ministry is probably about 30 people. Out of those 30, we have 25 people in man-to-man discipleship right now. and it's making a difference. And it's a slow process, but, you know, it's slow and it's not slow. You guys know, if you haven't seen the multiplication thing, Max talked about it a little bit last night, but, you know, 5 years ago we said we're going to start discipling people hardcore. We got after it. We had 7 people. And at last year we had 13. Now, Carver's College, we're always rotating out, so sometimes that changes. This year we have 25, but I projected 5 years ago that by the time I was 61, 3 times of the world's population would know Christ if we followed through with discipleship. Now here's the deal. I'm a realist. Statistics mean nothing. But I thought, what if only 10% made it? Well, that would 186 million people be worth it to do life on life with? If you got to be 61 years old and 186 million people are walking with the Lord because you committed to just meeting with one person a year the rest of your life and them meeting, would it be worth it? That's just 10% of what the number was. It'd be worth it, guys. And so don't write things off. Like I said, this may not, and I'll be happy to talk to you about this material. I don't have any information on this other than what's on the back of the book. The website is this. It's www.IEAOM.org. And that's where you can go. And they got a phone number on there because I usually just call these guys. I don't order offline because you can't get the deal for $15 offline. So I call them. You know, this has worked well for us. We got a one pack of that we haven't used yet, and then a pack I have here that I've kind of used. We just want you to have tools. And like I said, you got to have a plan. So if you don't have a plan, you're looking for one, come talk to us. If you got a great plan at your campus, use it. Use it till it doesn't work anymore or whatever. But go ahead. Yeah, right here. They're available in a lot of, I don't know how many, but yes, he's used it. He's used it in Afghanistan currently. I think Iran. He's used it in some of the old Eastern Bloc countries in Eastern Europe. So yeah, they've translated into multiple languages. I just don't know. Yeah, I bet it is in Spanish, I would guess. So, but if you're interested, I'll talk more about that. If you have any other questions, we're right at 12 o'clock right now, so I know some of you may have agendas, but is there any other questions first?
When you were talking about the friendship piece, like, does it, like, give you suggestions of things you should do with people, or are you just saying, like, they're doing this together?
No, actually, it's both and. I mean, some of it's just doing it together that helps them, but it'll say right in there, ask your Timothy about these issues in his life. You know, that are kind of personal. Well, how's your family? You know, you talked about your grandpa last week. How's he doing this week? Just little things that sometimes we're not as good at. The biggest reason I'm not good at it, I'm pretty selfish a lot of times. I'm just kind of like, you know, I got my own thing. I'm going somewhere. I'm on track. But it's like, slow down for a minute. Know these people. And then the other pieces are just all the doing it together parts is the other part. But it's just, go ahead.
There's spiritual assignments actually in one of the two books, The Call to Growth. Where it actually gives you things that they suggest you go try, like at the, you know, like in the next week, go out to eat together. One of the things they give you is this little track called Steps to Peace with God, and you give one of these to your Timothy, and they say, go out to eat together, pray with your waitress, and give them one of these. And so you just spend time together doing things, like all those suggestions are doing things outside of, you know, maybe like your normal meeting time or whatever. So you go out to eat together and you have a great time and you just happen because you're a Christian to share your faith.
Like I said, you mentioned the book. You said maybe in discipling some of this doesn't seem new to you. It's just been reworded differently. One of the kids I was working with, Derek Gregory, if you know him, kind of put this thing about table talk. Sitting there, drinking coffee, working on the homework, over the table kind of stuff that you're doing together is a great way of discipleship. And that's what you made that remind me of it. I take guys out to eat all the time. You know, it's like, oh, you want to go eat? Nah, it's too expensive. Don't worry, I'll pay for it. You know, because it's a good excuse to have time. But I think that looks pretty good because one thing I was ran into was listening to them and then being like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I just never really, I feel like now the more I think about it, things that I could have turned around, just opportunities to kind of share the gospel were more just like me just listening passively, accepting, and you know, just get them involved in my life and my campus ministry. But outside of that, it's like,
there's nothing really articulate up here. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if you're not going to plan for it, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think every opportunity, you know, you go out, that's a great one, going out to eat and giving a waitress something. Actually, a question I ask waitresses, because I had somebody teach me this, is we're getting ready to pray for our meals, or something I can pray for you over. I've not had a waitress turn me down yet. As a matter of fact, most of them, as busy as they may even be, will stand and pray with you as you do it. So there's things you can do, but you know what? You know why I did that? Because somebody that discipled me did that with me. That's why I do it. It's not because I just thought that was a great idea one day. As a matter of fact, the first time they did it, I thought, I think I need to go to the bathroom right now. You know, I need to leave the table, you know. I was like, they're not really doing this right now while I'm standing here. And they were doing it, and they did, and made an impact on somebody's life. That's how I know it's because somebody did it with me. Had they not done that, I am not, I'll be honest with you, I'm not an idea guy. I will reinvent, I don't, you know, whatever's out there works for me, you know. I don't have any new ideas, and, you know, whatever somebody says, hey, try that, I'll try it, because I just can't think of an idea. So, you know, don't be afraid to take your guys, gals with you and do those kind of things. So, other questions? All right, well, thank you for coming. If you have questions, you want to come up and look at some of this material, if you don't even care about the material, but you got some other question, we're here. So that's what we want to do with you guys, and I appreciate your attention, and thanks for coming in today.